So, a missionary from Papua New Guinea returned to the States with a great burden on his heart. The people of Papua New Guinea are extremely open to the gospel, and yet so few people are willing to go there. So he went to this ginormous church and presented the work that was going on in his part of Papua New Guinea and begged for teachers to be willing to go along back to this cannibalistic island and teach these people about Jesus. And he gave this call, this room filled with many a family, many a young person, and nobody volunteered. And after the service, he was standing in the back, shaking hands, like visiting ministers do, right? And everybody's coming around there, shaking hands with him, and thank you, that was a wonderful talk, but we'd rather stay home and build mini barns or work at our stores and whatever. And this young man rolls up on a wheelchair and says, "Sir, you said you need teachers in Papua New Guinea." And, "Yeah, you know somebody?" He said, "Yes, I would like to go." "You've only got one leg." "How many two-legged guys volunteered?" "You may all rise." "Thank God you've got two legs. Right? You may be seated." "Figure it out for yourself, my lad. You've all that the greatest of men have had. Two arms, two hands, two legs, two eyes, and a brain to use if you would be wise. With this equipment they all began. So start for the top and say I can. Look them over, the wise and great. They take their food from a common plate, and similar knives and forks they use. With similar laces they tie their shoes. The world considers them brave and smart, but you've all they had when they made their start. You can triumph and come to skill. You can be great if only you will. You're well equipped for what fight you choose. You have legs and arms and a brain to use. And the man who has risen great deeds to do began his life with no more than you. You are the handicap you must face. You are the one who must choose your place. You must say where you want to go, how much you will study the truth to know. God has equipped you for life, but he lets you decide what you want to be. Courage must come from the soul within. The man must furnish the will to win. So figure it out for yourself, my lad. You were born with all that the great have had. With your equipment, they all began. Get a hold of yourself and say, I can. Say, I can. Okay, that was kind of weak. Oh, let's think about this. Say, I can. Okay, come on, folks. You're going to have to be convincing. I want the cooks to complain about the sound. Okay, you ready?
I can!
Oh, yes, that's what I'm talking about. You'll have good voices. I love that. Our goal today is to identify pre-existing sources of wisdom, inspiration, and ideas for first-year teachers. You all sound very inspired, by the way. Thank you. That's exciting to me. Section 2. Our takeaway for today is use your God-given resources. In the Bible, there was a young man who was very scared. He'd been chased from his home. He and his family were living in a cave. And because of this fear, he was hiding while he was trying to come up with a little bit of food for his family to eat. And suddenly beside him, there stood this man in shining clothing and gave him a horrific job to do. This young man's name was Gideon. He felt totally unprepared for what he was asked to do. Probably similar to what you have felt. I hope you felt some of that this week already. I hope you keep feeling that. And yet, just like Gideon, Are you totally inexperienced? Are you totally inexperienced? Is there anyone in here under the age of 18? Yes. Anyone under the age of 16? Got Brett back here being honorary. No? Good. Then each of you has 16 plus years of life. Right? How many of you went to school? Oh, well, you're already experienced school teachers. You just weren't the teachers when you were in school. You have experience. You can use it. People, use them. In the story of Gideon, the first job that God gave Gideon was tearing down the idol of Baal. And the angel told Gideon, take some people with you. Gideon took 10 servants with him. I don't think that that's stretching it for the amount of people it's going to take to help you through this school year. You're going to need people to help you. Your church. You know, in Ephesians 4, verse 11, it says, and he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and teachers. Did you realize that you are a gift to the church you're going to be teaching in? I would just love it if a church would get some refrigerator boxes and wrap them all up in wrapping paper and ribbons and all the fancy things that they do for birthday gifts and everything. And they would carry these things up and set them on the stage in church and then cut them open, and the teachers would come out and they would say, brothers and sisters, here are your gifts God gave us. Praise the Lord. I want you to feel like that. That's what God did. God gave you. Trust me. Brother Derek, your church is still looking for a teacher. If any of you doesn't have a school, let him know. But when they get one, he is going to feel like he just got a birthday present. Am I wrong?
That's right.
You're a gift. Gideon's first job was to deal with worship. He knew that his main job was to attack the Midianites. And as you think about that, I want you to think about God as a person. People. Is God a person? Absolutely. He's a resource. In Judges 6, verse 12, when that angel was talking with Gideon, he said, the Lord is with thee. It's one of the, was the first thing he said to him. The Lord is with thee. The week before last, Sunday before last, I was preparing to go to Oklahoma for a week of teachers' meetings. And I felt a little bit overwhelmed. Well, I had to go without my wife, and I don't like doing that. And our minister got up, and he said he's going to be speaking from the life of Moses and talk about Moses' objections to doing God's will. And the first one was that they're not going to believe me, and God said, I'm going to go with you. I just stuck with me. God is with you. Your family. Did you know that you can use your family and teaching? My father had some wonderful school experiences, and my children enjoy when I tell them stories about when my dad went to school. Tell your students stories about when your dad went to school. Or about your dog. Or your pet gecko. Or whatever. Friends. After Gideon had torn down the idol of Baal, God told him to go fight the Midianites. Gideon laid out his fleece twice. He was still doubtful. He was human. So God said, go down to the camp of the Midianites and listen to them. He said, take Phurah, your servant, with you. Take somebody along with you. You're going to need friends. I would just like to tell you that your friends are going to need you too. Don't quit being a friend just because you're a teacher. I want you to get new friends, yes. But save your old ones. You need those regular people in your life. School. Use the people who are already a part of the school board. Even the Apostle Paul answered to his home church, or we might call them the mission board. The parents. When Gideon tore down the altar of Baal, the people came to his father Joash and said, we want your son, we want to kill him now because he tore down the temple of Baal. And His dad said, you know what? You guys are bad. Because if Baal is really a god, let him punish Gideon. And let any one of you who tries to do his work for him get killed. The parents are on your side. They want these children to get to heaven, probably as much or more than you do. Your co-teachers, if you have any, they're like salt and pepper. When you're too excited about something, they will dump a little bit of salt on you and say, hey, calm down a little bit. That might not be the greatest idea. And when you're getting boring, they might add a little bit of spice to your life. The first year I taught, because of a bad situation in the previous year in my home community, I did not think I really wanted to talk with my co-teachers. And so I didn't for most of the first 6 weeks. I'm very embarrassed to tell you that, but it's true. These two young ladies finally came into my classroom one day. I was sitting there checking my papers very studiously. And they sat down in front of me and said the four words that strike fear into the heart of every man. We need to talk. And we did! And it was wonderful! And they helped me walk through that school term. And some of the things that they told me still affect the way I teach today. Publishers, did you know that the people who wrote these books you're going to be teaching actually have support staff who's there to help you? Call them. It's okay to call CLE and say, what were you thinking in lesson 32? How am I supposed to get this across? That's okay. Trust me, you won't be the first nor the last to do that. Okay? And the call Mr. Jonathan Erb. He's a rep and whatever. They're there for you. Other teachers, you will need a mentor or two or four. I would beg of you to get someone's phone number, someone you're comfortable with, someone who's taught for a number of years before you leave here, or an email, however you'd prefer to get a hold of people. When Gideon and his 300 men attacked the Midianites, his instructions to them were, look on me and do likewise. You need someone like that in your life. I can tell you that Brother Verlin has been that for me at times. I've called him and said, Verlin, what do I do when this happens? He said, well, you know, when I was in Kansas, and we go over things. Brother Jonathan Erb has done it for me numerous times. You need mentors. I still need mentors. How much more do you? Please, find one or more. Yourself. Are you a person? Absolutely. Use your own past. If you want your students' attention, you just say these words. When I was in school, we actually ate in huge cafeteria, kind of like the gym out here, except the ceiling was a lot lower, more like this room. And there was rows and rows of tables in there. And my second grade friends and I had heard that occasionally the high schoolers would have food fights. We thought, wouldn't that be wonderful though? I mean, if one of the high school boys mistook his hamburger for a Frisbee, and we had the most boring high schoolers in our school. They never thought that their Jell-O was a softball. They would just sit there and very calmly eat day after day after day. It didn't matter how hard we watched them. And this one day we were eating our hot dogs there, and we had those two bottles, the red one for the ketchup, yellow one for the mustard, on the table, nice squishy ones. And one of my friends said, I wonder what would happen if we would squeeze those bottles. Do you think it would hit the ceiling? I went, wow, well, that's it, you know. There's only one way to find out, you know. And somehow, I got elected to be the scientist in this groundbreaking experiment. And so I placed the ketchup bottle in between my chubby hands and bit my tongue just right. Squeeze with all my might. And the ketchup fountained up out of that thing and it nailed the ceiling. And just to, now that the experiment is working, I decided to expand it a little bit, and so I wiggled it back and forth. So that, you know how they do on the top of a hot dog, And it worked. There's just nice little zigzaggy lines of ketchup on the ceiling. And I was a little shrimp of a guy, kind of small for my age, and it was unusual for me to get healthy attention rather than getting picked on at school. This felt really good. People were smiling, wow, yay, look at that. And the warm circles were going around my heart. And one of my friends says, bet you can't hit it with the mustard. Now, where I was growing up, that was, pretty dangerous if somebody bet you something. And one of my other friends said, I double dare you. And when that happened, if you didn't do it, you were probably going to die. Very soon. Anyway, and so I grabbed the mustard, and I placed it exactly where the ketchup had been. And it nailed it, would you believe it? And I wiggled it down through there, too. It was this beautiful red and yellow stream on the ceiling. And by this time, we had the attention of almost everybody down this long tables. And this cheer went up. Everybody's clapping. And now the warm circles, my heart's just feeling really warm. It's just wonderful to be the hero for once in my life. And about that time, the principal's hand landed on my shoulder. And it rather, gently squeezed. And somehow I kind of rose out of my chair. This anti-gravity thing. And the room became utterly silent. There was not a, you could have heard a fly's tear drop. And he took me down the hallway. My feet touched once every 10 feet or so. It was about, in my mind, it was about 6 miles to his office. I'm sure it wasn't that far. And we got into his office and he had me stand up against the wall on one side of his desk and I stood on this side of his desk. And he pulled out a 3-foot section of garden hose. I was pretty sure I knew what that was for, but I didn't really want to find out too bad. And he said, Jonah, no! Is it okay to waste food? No! Whap! And he hit the top of his desk with that 3-foot section of garden hose. And I leaped back against the wall, and my teeth began to rattle, and my eyes started leaking. And I learned that it's not a good idea to waste food. He gave me the whole instruction my parents had given me over and over again about the starving children in India. Whack! And so on and so forth. And every time I jumped back and my head was really hurting from hitting that wall. He never touched me with the garden hose. But my opinion of wasting food was very much altered from that moment. Memories, use your own. When Gideon was talking to that angel, he said, where are the miracles? Where's the God who parted the Red Sea? He recalled God's miracles. Your own childhood. Talk about things that happened before you were in school. Like the time when I was 2 years old and trying to help my father carry bricks across the back porch. I'm not exactly sure why I thought that he needed the bricks carried across the back porch. But I was doing that, and I dropped one of them, and it landed on my big toe. And my big toe popped, kind of like a cherry tomato. And there was blood everywhere and everything. And I tried to get back inside, and the door was locked. And I stood there outside that door, a little two-year-old, sobbing my heart out with my toe there, leaking blood. My lifeblood oozed out onto the ground. They want to know about things that happened to you. Your school days. Like the time that I got in a fight in the playground. Just one of the times. But anyway. And I got caught. My three friends and I, of the 25 or so students that were involved in the fight. And we were the ones who got dragged up and sat down on the sidewalk outside the school. This wasn't fair. There were 25 students involved in the fight. And just because we beat the other guys didn't mean that we should be the ones that had to get sat down on the sidewalk. We sat there and we looked at each other. And this was back in the 80s when school children were skinnier because they rode their bikes to school. And there's this whole row of bikes right behind us. Almost everybody rode a bike to school. And we nodded our heads. And we each picked up a little stick. And we let air out of everybody's tire except our own. And as I was letting air out of the last bike tire, Mrs. Edgler, a former nun, at least I think she was former at that point, turned and looked at me. Jenna? Mm-hmm. Did you let the air out of these bike tires? Mm-hmm. And my friends are sitting there. Little angels, you know. We had, they say there's no honor among thieves, but there was no. I didn't rat them out. She said, I will give you two choices. You need to get spanked in front of the classroom, or you can make a confession that you did this to everybody else's bike. Now, in our school, making a confession like that in front of the 50 or so other students who had flat tires was the equivalent of asking to get beat up repeatedly over the next couple weeks. But I, being a normal child, thought that deferred punishment was better than immediate punishment. And so I stood up in front of all these third and fourth graders who were all bigger than me and meaner than I was. And as Mrs. Edgler stood behind me holding a paddle, I told them that I had let air out of all their bike tires. And several of them were like, they were going to get me. And so at the end of the school day, I raised my hand in my room. I need to use the restroom. And I decided that it would be best if I did that at home. And so I got on my bike and I rode home as fast as I could. And I opened the door and pulled my bike in the door. And my father is a registered nurse, and he had worked the night before. And he was there in the living room reading a book. And Jenna, why'd you put your bike in the door? Well, it's a nice bike, Dad, and I would hate for anything bad to happen to you, you know? Dad's very perceptive. He kind of looked at it. He didn't say a lot. A little while later, Dad said, Jenna, yeah, why are the children pushing their bikes down the road? Well, Dad, it looks like they have flat tires. And Dad said, Jenna, Dad, do you know anything about that? Me? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Dad looked out the door, and here the most unpopular girl in school was pushing her bike past our house. And Dad said, did you let air out of her bike tire? And I knew I had. It was the one tire I felt bad about letting air out of it, because she got picked on by everyone. And Dad said, you're going to take your own money, and you're going to push her bike all the way across town to the gas station and air that tire back up. And so I did. But as I was doing that, as I was pushing Jenny's bike down the street, the other children dropped their bikes and they just lined the street. It was like a parade. And as we went by, they were just taunting, Jonah's pushing Jenny's bike, Jonah's pushing Jenny's bike. Now, extreme humiliation. But we got down there, I paid 25 cents to put the air back in the tire. And that probably saved me from numerous beatings during the next couple weeks. Your children want to know about those kinds of things. Experiences. Use your own. You know, when David went to Saul, and Saul said, who are you to face this giant? And David said, well, there was a lion and there was a bear. They didn't handle it. Places you've been. How many of you have been out of the United States? Wow. World travelers we are. Okay. Tell your students about it. Tell them about your trip to Iceland or wherever it was you went. The people you've met. I had the privilege of being in a meeting like this when Lester Showalter was still teaching. I don't know if any of you know who he is, but he wrote a number of, or helped with a number of Rodden Staff's textbooks. Failures. Your children want to know about the times that you made a mistake. They can learn from your mistakes. I tell my students about the time I got caught cheating in school and how my teacher asked me if I was cheating and I lied about it. And so she spanked me for cheating and for lying. And how when I got home that night, my big brother, being just responsible person that he is, told my dad that I had gotten spanked at school for cheating and lying. And so my dad spanked me at home for cheating and lying. And I thought it best to stand for a while after that. They want to know about your victories, good things that happened in your life. For example, our one daughter has asthma. And at one point, she was in the hospital, very, very ill. They were talking about airlifting her to another hospital if her temperature went up much higher. And while this was going on, our other daughters were staying with their aunt and uncle. And one of them got sick, and they were stressed out too. And I, as a father, I left my wife and daughter at the hospital to go home to help the other daughters. And I cried out to God on the way. I said, God, this isn't fair. That dad isn't supposed to have to leave one daughter in the hospital and go try to help the other ones at home. I can't be two places at one time. And God said, that's right. You can't. I can. Students need to hear about times like that, that when there's been a victory for you. They want to hear about accidents you've had, like when you dump your iced coffee. Or misconceptions you've had. For example, I was in fifth grade before I found out that a spouse was a person and not a furry animal with a long tail. And no, mine is not a furry animal with a long tail. Jobs you've done. I saw a number of you had jobs before you got here. Gideon was out threshing when he was told to get to work with these Midianites. Tell your students about things you've done before. Ideals. Derek already mentioned that your character is going to teach much more than what the things that you say. When that angel came to Gideon, he said, Gideon, you're a man of valor. That mighty man of valor. He already was a brave man. He didn't suddenly become a brave man and then go attack the Midianites. Your goals. I hope your goals are higher than surviving your first year of teaching. They need to be bigger than that. Your worldview. I hope you have a godly worldview. Our world is in turmoil. But even when Gideon faced those Midianites, the Lord delivered them. Your confidence in God. Your children are going to talk about lots of things this school term. I want you to assure them that God is bigger than presidential elections. Okay, during COVID, I had the privilege of over and over telling my children, God's bigger than COVID. He's bigger than this. He's got it. Your love for children. I hope that that's one of the reasons you're teaching. Your children will know. So if you don't have love for children, pray for it, okay? Because that's something you can't fake. And your humility. A very wise teacher told me my first term. He said, when you make a mistake on the playground or in the classroom, just go ahead and apologize for it. You won't be telling the students something they don't already know. And I've been surprised, like, when I would come back in sometimes, I'd be like, you know, as children, no, I sort of lost control of my temper on the playground yesterday. You sure did! They know. You're just agreeing with reality. Tools. There are tools that are familiar to you and to your students. When Gideon went to pull down the idol Baal, he used a bullock, something he was familiar with. When he went to fight the Midianites, they used a horn, a torch. People who live in caves use torches, right? And pitchers, things that weren't familiar to them. Books. These are your new tools. If you haven't been using them before, welcome to teaching. The Bible. Use the Bible to teach. These are Christian schools. Teacher's guides. Read the fine print. Brother Derek has a teacher's guide here. And in the very front, I can find it again.
That one may not have it. This is the second book.
This is the second one. You had the other one. But in the very front of the other teacher's guide, he had the first page said, Dear Teacher. There's fine print in the front of those books for you to read. Read them. Handbooks. I hope you have access to the Handbook for Creative Teaching. If you don't have one of those, it's an excellent book for a reference source. Seven Laws of Teaching, Brother Verlin will cover that here in a few days. Reference books. Your children would love for you to become their dictionary, encyclopedia, / atlas. They will come up to you and say, what does discombobulated mean? You need to learn three words, and I'm going to make you practice them because I want you to learn them. They're very easy to say, so I'll say them once and then you say them after me, okay? Look it up. Okay? What does discombobulated mean?
Look it up.
What book should I look it in?
Dictionary.
What is Hawaii State Flower?
Look it up.
In what book?
Encyclopedia.
Good. How far is it from here to Miami?
Look it up.
What book? Very good. How many Jameses are there in the Bible?
Look it up.
What book?
Of
Bible Dictionary. Thank you. Which verse in the Bible mentions success?
Look it up.
Now which book? Concordance. Thank you. You all are good at that. You will need to say that a lot of times this year, so just get used to saying,
look it up.
Periodicals. These are going to be your new wonderful things to read. Gentlemen, instead of Outdoor Life or whatever hunting magazine you like, ladies, instead of, you know, Ladies Journal or whatever tickles your fancy, you need to be reading these. Keep your self sharp. Use libraries occasionally. There are books there that you cannot find on the internet. Be careful with using them, but I still use our local library occasionally. And it's okay to use the internet with discretion. Be aware that finding truth on the internet is like taking a sip of water from a fire hydrant. It's not easy. You're going to get way too much, and it's not nearly all going to be good information. So be very careful saying the Google says. School supplies. Use the board. Notice that Derek already did that. You can sometimes ask your students, what is that? I get to tell this joke because I'm half Mexican. It's a Mexican riding a bike from the top.
It's a sombrero.
It's called drawing attention. Jesus wrote on the ground. God wrote on a wall. Why shouldn't teachers write on things too, right? Paper. You are going to use a lot of paper, I hope. Get used to using it. Your students are familiar with it. They're handling it every day. You can use it to ask them things like, how many pieces of paper does it take to cover a globe? It's more than you think. But it's something that's tactile, familiar to them. A pencil. These pencils are amazing because they can write any language, any color, and they have a delete button on the back. And they can be used to show that light can help. You can use it to show that light bends as it hits water, and so on. Your class table. Sandra, would you reach forward and just touch this table? And the table right there. There you go. What can you tell us about it?
It's hard.
Hard? Very good. Carrie, would you touch it as well? What can you tell us about it?
It has a wooden look.
It has a wooden look. Okay, what else? Especially you lower grade teachers, think about things like, is it rough or smooth? Is it hard or soft? Is it wet or dry? We think those things are given for these little people that are not. Those are concepts that, when they're, use the familiar. We'll get into that in Seven Laws of Teaching as well. Use it at lunch. You can use a yogurt cup to teach volume. Gravel. I have used gravel to teach addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. Have them scoop little rocks around on their desks. David used 5 stones Why shouldn't you? A clock. I recently have discovered that very, very few fourth graders are capable of reading a clock like this. That is absolutely horrible. Okay? If you don't have one like this, use a regular clock on your classroom wall. If you're a lower grade teacher, put the numbers out around it, especially for the quarter after and 30 and so on. Coins. Don't just ask your students how much a certain amount of coins would be. Give them a few coins and have them count them. There's something special about holding the weight of the money so much more real than counting quarters that have been drawn on a piece of paper. Give them the real thing. In real life, does anybody draw, hand you a picture of a penny? So, no. Your globe. Use the globe without apology. It is extremely important that we teach around Earth. I almost can't believe that anyone would think that it isn't. And how much money did I give?
$2.11.
$2.11. And you might notice that some of these dollars were a little interesting. A wall map. There isn't one in here, but if you have one in your room, use it. If you don't have one in your room, get one. Collections. I hope some of you were noticing what was on the front of the desk here. Did you notice that? Mm-hmm. I enjoy rocks. Here is a piece of obsidian, also known as natural glass. I'll pass it around to feel it carefully because you actually can cut your fingers on that. It's extremely hard. If you're not a collector, become one. All right. Another thing that I have as a gift from an Indian is some arrowheads, as well as a drill. This will be used for leather. Originally, there would have been a piece of wood attached to the top, so you could put force down on it. And ladies, this is a, if I can say it right, a hide knife. This was used to scrape hide. So the men would have shot the buffalo and taken the meat out and gotten the hide off and brought the hide back and given it to the ladies, and the ladies would have spent hours and hours and hours and hours scraping the hide. And this actually does not fit my hand as well as it will a lady's hand, because it actually is made to fit a lady's hand. But they would hold it like this and then draw it back. And you can take turns holding it and imagining yourself dragging that across a smelly buffalo hide until all of the fat was off the hide. Tools of your trade. Use them. You know, Gideon, as he was chasing the Midianites, came to the town of Succoth and asked them for some food for his men. And they said, "Who are you? We don't really care about you." So Gideon went on and finished off the Midianites. And he came back and taught the men of Succoth a lesson with thorns and briars. I don't know how many of you have ran into thorns and briars, but being taught a lesson with them sounds rather painful. A tape measure. Gentlemen, you for sure need a tape measure like this one. Take a look at it and tell me what you notice. What's special about it?
Maybe these small numbers here?
It's English on one side,
okay,
and magic on the other.
Oh, I'm from Mexico, they're all like that there.
Okay, so you're used to this.
Yeah.
Yes. So here in the States, it's wonderful to hand my students an English metric tape measure and have them measure things with it. And suddenly the concept that there's two different scales involved here becomes much easier. Ladies, you're used to using measuring cups, teaspoons, tablespoons, and all this kind of thing. Don't have your students look at pictures in their books. Have them get a couple cup measures and pour them four times into a quart jar to see that there's four cups in the quart. do the real thing. Have them use their rulers. On the way here, we stopped at a truck stop, and there were several tool trucks beside us. And as the men were out milling around their trucks, I heard one of them ask one of the others, "So, did you teach him how to read a tape yet?" Beautiful grown men. Okay. Teach your students how to read a tape, starting there. A microwave. You know, you can use a microwave to teach lessons. Aside from don't put a fork in. A mirror. You can use mirrors to teach them about how light is reflected. Ladies, when you're teaching dozens, this is an excellent tool. Once again, it's a familiar thing to teach students how many is in a dozen, or even how many is in half a dozen. Use a blueprint. Most of you should be able to find one of these. Surely someone in your congregation does some construction work. Rather than just talking about scale drawings, get one out. And the tools of your trade. If you've had a job before and you've got some tools, don't be scared of bringing them into your classroom. Now, each of you is going to be teaching somewhere. So use locations. Your home. Gideon was behind his wine press. You can tell your students at our house, this is the way that we do things. Use their bedroom. For example, you might say, now, just imagine if there was an elephant in your bedroom. Start picturing how big it is and so on. Your school property. You know, when Gideon was at the water, choosing his men. The schoolroom. Derek already talked about that, but make sure your walls teach. Your school building. For example, you can tell your students that the end of the school building is a pentagon. Or have them find the volume of the room or the surface area. Your playground. Put the sun at home plate the size of a basketball and find out where Earth would be. Draw Noah's Ark on the playground. Your area. Each of you are going to have a general area. Use the land features, the hills, valleys, rock formations, the creeks, the weather patterns. Measure the rainfall in your area. Like Gideon, you lack prior experience in the work God has called you to do. Yet God has chosen you, and he will be with you. For years, he has been preparing you to teach. Just like he did for Gideon, God has already surrounded you with abundant resources. Use them to accomplish his purposes, for God has delivered them into your hand. Our takeaway again, use your God-given resources. Thank you for your attention.